College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Radio Row in New Orleans, ahead of Super Bowl 59. Grant and Danny with you on the Fan. Danny is back in our Half Street studios. I'm out here in the wildness that is Radio Row. It's now Media Row, I guess. No such thing as Radio Row. But man, is it nuts. I will say, Danny, there's one person today that has drawn a bigger crowd than Jaden Daniels at this activation where everybody gathers around. And it's right now, and it's Stephen A. Smith, believe it or not.
How about it?
That's the only person who's drawn a bigger crowd than Jaden Daniels today that we've seen.
Where's he at?
Stephen A. Smith's over there right now doing whatever Stephen A. Smith does. And people are enjoying
it. He's just Stephen A. Smith and up to 11.
Yes, he is. The voice you just heard is Daryl Moose Johnston, who's joining us on Grant and Danny. Thrilled to have him back on the program. Last time I talked to you, I believe, Moose, you were in D.C., getting ready for the kickoff of the United Football League season. Of course, one of the gentlemen who runs the United Football League. And it was a great year for the D.C. Defenders, XFL, merging with the USFL and the UFL. And things went very well, I thought, for the fan base. And the league is back and ready for more.
Yeah, it was a crazy year last year. I think we were, what is the saying? We were drinking from the fire hose while we built the airplane. On the football side, I think we were very, very happy with the product. The season was great. I think one of the areas, because the cadence was so challenging, once the merger came together, we weren't officially a league until January 12th, and that wasn't too long before we were kicking off, that we focused all of our energies into the football side of everything. And this year, with a normal offseason and a normal cadence, we were able to kind of get to the business side and really take a look at, you know, exactly what you're looking at right now. I mean, that's the new website. It was just upgraded a couple of days ago. We announced our headquarters, which is a huge, huge component of what we're doing and trying to make the day-to-day experience for our players to be a little bit more manageable. We're a little bit nomadic in the things we ask them to do. So we kind of identified a few areas this year that we wanted to get better at. We'll continue to do that year after year. But hats off to everybody in year one getting that league up and running, and now year two really kind of coming behind that with some really great additions on the business side of the league and really getting that component into shape.
What are the metrics of success for you this year, just in terms of that part that you're talking about, Daryl? Whether it's the business side of it, it's easy for, you know, media folks to say, well, these are the TV numbers and call balls and strikes on that. But for you, as someone who's, you know, committed to this thing growing, what are metrics for success that you guys are judging against?
Outwardly, it would be the competitiveness of the football. How many of our guys get an opportunity, you know, to chase that NFL dream when our season ends and they move towards the NFL season. Inwardly, us generating more revenue. The ability to increase attendance across all eight markets, I think is something that we would like to see change this year. And being able to have, you know, more of a little bit of a footprint in each of our home markets with our business people is hopefully going to help us there. How do we connect in a hub model with our players and our staffs back into the home market on a consistent basis where we're generating interest? How are we bringing attention, you know, to what we're doing in these home markets? So there's a lot of things inwardly that we're looking at that should have an impact on both the revenue component and the attendance component. But the most important thing will always be the football. You know, making sure that the football is extremely competitive. We're innovative. We press the envelope on technology. We looked at everything we did last year, and when we get into the rule change component, I think the big thing, you know, that we talked about is going back to the kickoff that the XFL started, that the NFL embraced last year. I really thought that was going to be a one and done. I thought that as a trial year, that kickoff would not be accepted by NFL fans.
Yeah, I think you last year on Radio Row, you suggested that.
Yeah.
You were not a big fan of it, right?
No, I'm not. I'm still not. I still like the traditional kickoff, but I also have to be smart for our players. And if the NFL is going to embrace this kickoff moving forward, then it doesn't make sense for us to have our guys doing something that's not something they're going to be doing at the NFL level. So it made sense for us to do that. And then after we made that decision, we hear the information coming out of the NFL that the lowest concussion rate that they've had, you know, in a season since they started tracking it in 2016. And with the big change being the kickoff, you would think that played a huge role in that. So it makes sense from a health and safety standpoint. It makes sense in a transitional standpoint for our players. So, you know, the one thing that you'll see this year is going to be, you know, our kickoff going back to what it was in the UFL and very similar to what they're doing in the NFL. But we've left that up. That's kind of the structure. Now we got to do finalize all the details with that. So we've asked, you know, Mike Pereira and Dean Blandino, you know, put your spin on this. So we keep the return rate where we were last year. That's the one thing we do want to make sure we do is, okay, if we're going to go this direction, the one thing that we do want to make sure we do is continue to have that return rate that we've had, you know, in the league using the traditional kickoffs.
Daryl Johnston is with us. The UFL getting ready to come back later this year, I believe, right? It's end of March?
End of March, March 28th, Friday night, yeah.
So can you take us inside, whatever you could tell us about the scheduling? And at one point in time, I think you guys started right after the XFL, before you were together, which is still February. End of March now is almost kind of even with baseball kicking off. What's the logic on the schedule? Or is it about venues? Or I have no idea what I don't know.
It's one of those things, right? Until you get into the managerial side, you know, you don't really know the logistics of getting a team to travel or getting a league to travel, you know, setting up all the practices during the course of the week. And then the other thing with scheduling is the venue component. And it's very challenging. You know, we've got a couple of venues that are tied into MLS and in some of the soccer
Audi's
components.
One of them in D.C.
Yeah, Audi's one of them in D.C. Now you've got, you know, the World Cup coming to North America next year, and that's going to have an impact on some of the venues there. You know, the Alamo Dome in San Antonio has a traditional cadence with events that you're always trying to work around, and they get the NCAA Final Four this year. So to watch our people work through the scheduling component with all the different venues across the league and come up with our schedule is one of the more challenging things that you get to watch. When people get a little bit frustrated with the schedule, you know, we do want to separate ourselves a little bit from the NFL in that post-Super Bowl. If we talk about more football in the spring and we miss football, well, let's give them an opportunity to miss football. So we've got to create a gap. And then the question is, what is the best gap? And I think, you know, we want to get to a point where we are traditional. And it was kind of frustrating for me. You know, the NFL used to kick off Labor Day weekend, right? It was always Labor Day weekend that there was an NFL game, you know, kind of leading into that, end of August, beginning of September. And now they've kind of moved off of Labor Day weekend because, you know, ratings were down. They were always low on Labor Day weekend, and they were always high on Christmas weekend. So, if you know, let's extend the season in and push through the Christmas holiday because we get more viewership on Christmas weekend than we do on Labor Day weekend. And so we're looking at lots of things like that. You know, what is the best slot for us to be in based on what the landscape is out there with other sporting options? And then also, how does that match against our venue availability, you know, to try and create a consistent kickoff date?
My favorite thing, Moose, is a longtime advocate of these spring leagues and a big fan now of the UFL. I go to all the Defenders games. When I'm watching any of these games at home, the transparency during reviews, we've talked about this in the past, I don't think the NFL will ever get where you guys are or is allowed to or would want to. I think it's stunning and it's amazing, though. And for people listening at home that don't know, I mean, we hear the interaction of the ref and Blandino in the booth, wherever he is, and you can hear them talking about the spot and is it caught. I guess number one, do you think there's ever going to be a time where that would even work at the NFL level from a broadcast standpoint? But also, is that as popular with your audience as I would assume it is? I mean, that's the best content going in football broadcast right now.
Yeah. It's been a tough year for the NFL, and it kind of peaked in the AFC Championship game. You know, to the point where the NFL has to come out and make statements that we're not fixing the games for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Right.
You know, you got kind of a problem here. It it's probably not as simple as we make it out to be. And we've got four matchups during the course of the weekend. They're going to have 16. You know, how do you dedicate one person there that you trust? You got to have 16 Mike Pereiras and Dean Blandinos, you know, to really get this done. I mean, you got to be, you know, in a deep knowledge of the rule book. And that NFL rule book is cumbersome. You know, ours is not nearly as challenging. We try to keep it as simple as we can, which allows us, you know, to be able to do that. But I agree with you, and I hear it from a lot of fans too, because they just want to know the why. I may not agree with it, but if I hear the why, I'm like, I still don't agree with it, but, you know, at least I know what they were thinking. I mean, this one kind of comes out, and it's like, you see things, and if you don't have somebody tell you that, you know, here's why that doesn't work. Is it a shot down the line? It's not truly down the round. There's a little bit of an angle that gives you that, even if you were doing something like that. But I think the NFL could benefit from it. Why don't they take video on the sideline? That's another one. Our guys are watching video on the sideline. The NCAA took it to their bowl games last year. I don't know what they did this year. I don't know if they implemented it all the way across. I would doubt they did it across the entire NCAA landscape.
To clarify, you're talking about like watching the iPad.
We're watching iPads on the sideline.
Why isn't that a thing?
Still watching. You know, they've got something on the Microsoft tablet, the Surface that they say is similar. And I've seen them where they're kind of splicing the cutups, just like you would get. You would be handed stills, and you would have to put them together. I think they're still coming across
as stills. Right.
And you're trying to piece it together. Just let me see where the safety came from. I just want to see where he started and where he ended up. And our quarterbacks are the ones that really talk about it. They're like, listen, you know, I'm watching it on the sideline the whole time. So then when I watch it together with the coach on Monday for the first time, I'm already way down the road on what I remember from the game. So then it's, you know, I feel like I'm way ahead during the course of the prep week. So I think that's another area where the NFL just allow the video to come down onto the sideline.
Darryl Moose Johnston with us here on G&D. Speaking of the NFL, big one this weekend, a Super Bowl matchup. Three-peat Kansas City, or, you know, kind of this rebuilt on the fly Philadelphia Eagles team. They were in this and won it a handful of years ago. It's almost a totally different roster since then now. They were here a couple seasons ago, toe-to-toe with the same Kansas City team. How do you see it going?
I'm not very good at predicting games, but I think this is probably selfish. I have a strong feeling for Philadelphia by 10, and it's probably because I don't want Patrick Mahomes to have the ball in his hand at the end of the game to beat the Eagles and win three Super Bowls in a row, which kind of takes away from our 3 and 4 years. So there's a lot of selfishness in my prediction. I think it's going to be hard for Kansas City to stop Saquon. They haven't had a running back rush for over 100 yards against them all season. Lamar went for 122 in week one, but that's a quarterback. The highest number for a running back was 88 by Joe Mixon in the divisional round. So they haven't really, you know, they stopped Derrick Henry, but Lamar Jackson hurt him. If they try to stop Saquon that way, can Jalen hurt them? And it'll be interesting to see, but you know, I think that's going to be one of the key points to watch, is that Philadelphia offensive line versus the Kansas City defensive front. I don't think Steve Spagnuolo gets enough credit. Mm-hmm. You know, here's a guy that over the last 2 years has the number one scoring defense in the NFL. It's not about Patrick Mahomes and explosive plays down the field anymore. It's about Patrick Mahomes minimizing his mistakes, allowing the defense to control and dictate to the opponent, and then being very advantageous when the situations present themselves. And he's learned to function. I think it's one of the cool things comparing him to Tom Brady. Tom Brady won with a number of different style rosters, and Patrick Mahomes has done that throughout his career at an early age, and that's a credit to him. I think one of the biggest things in this game is going to be both of these teams are 1-2 in 10-plus play possessions. So 10-plus plays without points, 10-plus play scoring drives. Philadelphia is number 2 in both of those categories. Kansas City is number 1 in both of those categories. So there's going to be a premium on the possession. And how do you adjust your coaching style knowing that going into the game? I mean, we go back to Sean Payton, right? I got to steal a possession against the Colts, so he does the onside kick. Do we see some different things from Nick Sirianni or Andy Reid because they understand this could be a game where I only get 7 possessions the entire game? And how do I make sure I maximize those possessions?
I'm looking, you guys, back-to-back, and then had a chance to go back-to-back-to-back, the closest team prior to the Chiefs, frankly, in terms of getting to the NFC Championship game against San Francisco, and you outscored them over the final three quarters. Slow starter, or else who knows.
21-0 after 6 minutes.
Was it really 6 minutes? Oh,
6 minutes.
Gosh. Goodness. So it was one of those things where it was like brutal start, doomed you, but the rest of the game you played your game.
Yeah, we could never get inside 10 points. We could never get into a single-digit lead. We got close. If you remember, there was a very suspect no pass interference call on Deion Sanders inside the 10-yard line that would have got it to 7, I think, and the ref didn't call it. So
not that you remember that.
Not that I remember
that. Exactly.
Somebody reminded me of that earlier today.
Before I let you go here, you've been gracious with your time. We appreciate you. I'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about Washington is back, it feels like.
Oh, my gosh.
In a big way. That rivalry with the Cowboys has just kind of been dead and dormant. And now feels like there's a little something cooking between Washington and Philly after they played in the NFC title game. But my question is, do you think it's possible with player movement the way that it exists now and, I don't know, it's not Redskins, Cowboys, right? Can that rivalry ever be special again, or is that time passed?
It'll always be a rivalry. It's just, you know, how much of a rivalry is it? For it to truly be a rivalry, there has to be high stakes in the games that are played. It can't just be divisional games during the course of the season. The Cowboy-Redskin rivalry was generated by meaningful games. You know, playing in NFC championship games, playing in playoff games. Those are the meaningful games. That's why when we played, a lot of us will consider Philadelphia our rival, more so than Washington, because we had a ton of meaningful games against Philadelphia. We never played Washington in the playoffs, but we played Philadelphia multiple times in the playoffs. So that they became meaningful games. They were the last team we beat in the NFC East as we started to emerge. So we already had a little bit of angst against Philadelphia. Then it just takes one time playing in at the vet,
yeah,
and then you become a forged anti-Philadelphia right. Eagle player.
We know about that. So,
you can hit to the ground on that turf once. Yeah.
I'm so excited for the NFC East. I miss the days. I mean, back in the early 90s when it was Giants running, we were up and coming. Philadelphia was dominant. I mean, we had you know, Washington was good. I mean, we had four teams, you know, that were really, really tough. We beat each other up during the course of the regular season, but we were so battle tested going into the playoffs, and we didn't blink after playing against some of those divisional games. I mean, it was great. It was awesome. And so, you know, with Washington back, with Philly back, the Giants and the Cowboys we got to get it figured out, and get this NFC East division back. It's so cool, right? Everybody, the NFC North, look at this, you know, the best records in the NFL, and then it's the NFC East in the championship game.
Love it. Well, I'd like it more if the championship game would have gone different, but I digress. You get it. Moose, thank you for the time.
And thank you, Moose.
Hey, whenever you want to talk UFL this spring, you know where to find
thank
us.
Thank you, Grant.
We appreciate you. There's Moose Johnston with us on Radio Row in New Orleans.
Media Row,
that's true. There's no such thing as Radio Row in 2025.
Media Mob.
Cynthia Freeland, who handles a lot of the analytics over at NFL Media, is going to stop by as we continue. Also, Myles Garrett said today he is interested in playing with Jaden Daniels. He is pushing this trade narrative. Let's get into that next on The Fan.